It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, unless I miss my guess, and I don't think I do, this program is live, and it's actually going out on HeadOn.live. The White Rose streamer, as usual, has some catching up to do. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday, the 17th day of June 2019. This program is, in fact, live from somewhere in the secure, undisclosed wilds of the greater metropolitan D.C. area. And I'm here doing work on the 8 campaign. My colleague, Bo, is one wall away. Oh, shoot. Buffering already. Okay. Well, maybe that's... Well, let's see if we can take a bite out of this before it becomes a giant pain in the tuchus. Sparky says, sounding good, Bob. Sounding good, Bob. Good. Thank you, Sparky. So let me know if the buffering persists, and I'll switch over to manual override and I don't know, we'll cheat at the Kobayashi Maru maneuver and whatever, what have you. But it's Moran Monday. Yesterday I drove from the hills and hollers of almost level West by Coal Trump Junior Stan here to the secure, undisclosed wilds of the greater metropolitan D.C. area. And I'm ensconced in a hotel. At least we're not having the throttling issues that we had last time I tried to do this. If worst comes to worst, I'll fire up the wireless internet as a hotspot, and we'll try it that way. Let's see. Let's do some housekeeping. I'm here for the week. We'll be God, we had 6 meetings today, and we got a bunch more tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then hopefully I get out of here reasonably early on Friday, and we'll have a Friday on the front porch, okay? Well, thank you. Steve in New York says, sounding great via HeadOn.live. That's good to know. Thank you, Steve. And like I said, White Rose Society may catch up at some point in time, but unfortunately it sometimes doesn't. It sometimes doesn't. So again, I'll be headed home on Friday, and like I said, hope to be back in the studio in time to do a Friday on the front porch. As for sort of catching up with things that need caught up on, this program begins every program we try with thanks. And thanks to our subscribers who help knock out about a week's worth of the funding in any given month. So by all means, let's and Glenn in New York. Thank you to Reinhardt, to Robert in California. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you to Chris in Germany. Thanks very kindly to Matt in San Francisco, to Ralphs. And let's see, that gets us to, let's see. Yep, that catches us up. Now, where are we as far as keeping the program on the air? I know it for a fact, but I don't. We'll just say that the fundraising number is somewhere around $700. It's more than that, but we'll deal with it that way. So that's the best I can say. Now, the Have a Week on Me challenge, anonymously offered, has $400 to go on it. Thanks very kindly to Chris for knocking out some of that as well. And hopefully we'll take care of that, because part of it is the fact that we've got Netroots Nation to deal with next month. And that's going to be a big old booger of an expense. So, with any luck at all, we'll catch up with the challenge. And anybody that wants to just jump in, run over to headon.live, hit the contribute button, and hopefully we'll take some of this down. And if we get done with fundraising this week, then next week is Fundraising Free Radio, which is freaking awesome, and I really look forward to. Oh, let's see. Yeah, still no high-quality stream on White Rose, but the White Rose low-quality stream is live. Thank you. Thank you for letting me know, Randy. I appreciate it. So it's Moran Monday here, and we've got a bumper crop. I had to click this one when I saw it earlier today, because it's just, well, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. This comes out of the ongoing litigation by the victims' families from Sandy Hook, the Sandy Hook massacre, back in 2012. They're suing Alex Jones for the vast amount that he heaped upon them with his bizarre claims that their children really weren't murdered, that they are crisis actors, and you know the rest of it. Well, the law firm that's representing the Sandy Hook parents and the victims' representatives have been engaging in discovery. And discovery, of course, is that process in the law in which a civil lawsuit is filed, and each side trades information so that they've got everything all nice and neat and tidy when the case comes to trial. And so Alex Jones's lawyers have been turning over documents pursuant to discovery requests by the Sandy Hook victim's family. And, well, what a surprise. Tucked away in the electronic filings, I guess in an attempt to set up the plaintiffs for some sort of bizarre claim, the lawyers for the Sandy Hook victims found, and I cannot emphasize how disgusting this is and how disgusting Alex Jones is and how disgusting anybody who would associate themselves with Alex Jones is. The lawyers for the Sandy Hook victims in the electronic filings of the discovery found that someone over on the Jones side had tucked child pornography in the disclosures. Now, the lawyers for the Sandy Hook victims did exactly what they were supposed to do. Apparently, it's not what Donald Trump would do, because they, the lawyers for the Sandy Hook victims, immediately called the FBI. Which is the right thing to do. They saw him, they stopped, they shut everything down. They called the FBI. The FBI came in, got the discovery, and then the FBI in turn contacted the Sandy Hook lawyers, the victims' lawyers, the plaintiffs, and said that they had found numerous additional illegal child pornography images that came from InfoWars and had been sent to their email addresses. This then precipitated a wild-eyed rant from Alex Jones, in which Alex Jones, then became somehow or another the victim. Now remember, along the way, Alex Jones again said that these families who were deprived of their precious little five, and as a result of the Sandy Hook mass, he said they weren't really killed, that they were actors, that there were no real dead bodies, there were no real 5, 6, 7-year-olds chewed up by instruments of American freedom, that is, to wit, firearms. Yeah. And Jones then claimed that, no, they weren't trying to plant kiddie porn on the plaintiffs, that someone was trying to plant it on him, saying, and I quote, "You're trying to set me up with child porn. I'll get your ass. $1 million, you little gang members. $1 million to put your head on a pike." It really hurts my throat. Oh, Alex. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. You know, and he started all this shtick, and he was just, you know, he was gonna do sort of an Art Bell on steroids thing, and it got completely out of hand, and he turned into a right wing jackass, and. Well, there you have it. Hey, thanks to Anatole for getting us started this evening. So we'll say we're down to 675, and that means 375 to go on the big have a week on me doubling challenge. Head on .live. I don't know. Let's see if I can pull this off here. This may totally screw things up. Maybe not. Production on the fly. Someday I'll have a staff. Booting up another device. Just stand by. Because I would rather not fool with a bunch of damn buffering all during the program, if it's at all possible to avoid. Uh. Okay, you want me to do that? I'll be happy to. All right, let's see if this makes things any better. And we will start having an uninterrupted show in fairly short order. As quickly as I'm able to determine whether this is working. No, that's not promising at all. Yeah. Try this way. Well, that's a loader. All right, theoretically we're back. I don't know how theoretically it will work, but we are back. for some reason or another, the cell phone internet hotspot didn't work as advertised. Imagine that. But nonetheless, no, we're back. What I was saying earlier is that in the course of our discussions today, one of the things we've been talking about is the similarity between the poisoning and death that takes place in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone compared to the same sort of diseases that the 9/11 first responders have had to deal with. Because it's essentially the same idea. Ultrafine particles get into you at a cellular level, subcellular level. Maybe that's part of the problem, the thunder. And as Dr. Michael McCauley pointed out in his testimony last April, they cause inflammation. And inflammation on that level will really, really wreck a system. And that's how they begin to do things like start tumorigenic processes. And so one of the things that John Stewart did last week was to call out the Congress. And I guess he did so on a generic basis because at the time he didn't want to seem terribly partisan. Regardless, the problem with the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund is not a Democratic problem. The problem with the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund is entirely and exclusively a Republican problem. Because, frankly, Republicans don't give a good goddamn about what happened to the people who, they care about the people who were killed on 9/11, because they were able to campaign and ride on their dead backs. But the people who are still suffering, who had their lives ruined by breathing that toxic, vile, poisonous hell, they're useless to the Republican Party from a political standpoint anymore. So consequently, who cares? So after his appearance in front of the House Judiciary Committee, John Stewart, he thought it was the smart thing to do, went on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and flat out said the biggest problem, and I'm glad he finally did say it, he said, Mitch McConnell has been the white whale of this since 2010. I want to make it clear that this has never been dealt with compassionately by Senator McConnell. He's always held out until the very last minute, and only then, under intense lobbying and public shaming, has he even deigned to move on it. Well, lo and behold, who knew that, well, look, there it is, public shaming. And McConnell called out on it by one of the creeps over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, you know, on that that morning thing they do. What is it, Fox and Fiends? McConnell shot back, we've never failed to address this issue, and we will address it again. I don't know why he's all bent out of shape, but we'll take care of the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund. When, Mitch? When? It should have been taken care of years ago. It should have been permanently funded. That's part of what's upsetting to John Stewart. But if I had a chance to sit down and just have a brief chat with Mr. Stewart, I would explain to him, John, buddy, Mitch McConnell has thousands of people that he represents that he actively supports poisoning. It's not like he's failing to act like he is in the case of the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund. He actively supports poisoning them, okay? Because that's where he is. Mitch McConnell supports blowing mountains to pieces, destroying them, flattening them, eliminating 1 million acres of carbon sink forest. Also, some of his political donors might make a buck here and there. And over in eastern Kentucky in the sacrifice zone, oh no, the numbers are similar to what we have in West Virginia. Lots of statistical excess deaths, vastly elevated birth defects, shockingly elevated cancer rates, heart disease, pulmonary disease, genitourinary diseases, digestive tract diseases, all brought about by breathing the poisonous dust off of these mountaintop removal sites, off of these surface mine sites, off of these blasting zones. And so what disseminated through lower Manhattan, let's call it a year, has been blowing through Appalachia since the 1990s. And yes, John Stewart, in his advocacy for the 9/11 responders, it is noble and it is well done and it is badly needed. But if you want to analyze the reasons that the problem remains a problem, why people who were first responders on 9/11 continue to worry and sweat and agonize over whether or not they're going to have coverage for things that they otherwise couldn't be treated for, yeah, it lands at Mitch McConnell's doorstep. But we would be remiss, and more importantly, we would be incorrect if we said that he was the problem. Yeah, John Stewart can call him the white whale, but the fact of the matter is he calls himself the Grim Reaper and giggles about it and smirks when in fact he's actively engaged in killing people, his own constituents. Steve in New York says, McConnell's actions are the classic difference between being indifferent to death and pain versus actually working to cause death and pain. Yeah, true. True. So, like I said, we've been making the comparisons in the meetings that we've had so far because those comparisons are valid. In the mountaintop removal, surface mining, sacrifice zone of Appalachia, we have a 9/11 every 3 years. Less than every 3 years. Somewhere around 3,600 people die every 3 years just in West Virginia's mountaintop removal counties, not counting Kentucky's, not counting Wise County, Virginia, where literally something like 30% of the physical county is gone. Not counting what happens in Tennessee, northeast Tennessee. That's just West Virginia. By the time you add in Kentucky and Virginia and Tennessee, it may be a 9/11 per year for 20 plus years. 20-plus years. But there's reason for us to think that we're making making real progress. Things are beginning to move with the bill. H.R. 2050. If you haven't called your member of the House of Representatives and either thank them for signing on to it or ask them to sign on to it lately, please feel free so to do. It would be much appreciated, not just by me, but by all of us who work for environmental justice in Appalachia. Now, again, it's more on Monday, and I'm just going to kind of bounce around a little bit. But God, some of this stuff you can't make up. It was, what, a couple of days ago? Or no, it's in within the last 24 hours or so. The nitwit Nero the noted stenographer from the New York Times, Maggie Haberman, tweeted a quote from Nitwit Nero, and it was from his interview with George Snuffleupagus over at ABC.
There's never been a time in the history of our country where somebody was so mistreated as I have been,
Trump tells George Stephanopoulos. That was Maggie Haberman's tweet. Well, Beavis, or Butthead, depending on how you view Donald Trump Jr., Uday, or Kuse, again, depending on how you view Donald Trump Jr., subtweeted Maggie Haberman and said,
"He's right. He's right."
Beauty may be only skin deep, but stupid goes clean to the bone.
He's right.
Probably the most impressive response to Junior's tweet came from Josh Marshall over at TPM. Who simply tweeted back a photograph of Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. Apart from everything else, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? You know, you could follow that with a tweet of William McKinley. Or James Garfield. Or, you know, FDR sitting in his wheelchair. Mistreated. You know, I don't think Junior would have to take a 23andMe test to figure out that, yes, he really is... really is a direct relation to Donald Trump, because monumental stupidity runs in that family like a white, and I do mean white, whitewater river. It runs hard, it runs fast, and it runs deep. Runs broad, too. There's Donald Trump, who's never been who's the most mistreated American of all time. And we know this how? Well, because what we found out recently is that what we thought was him watching Fox during his so-called executive time, he's actually out he's out behind the White House chopping cotton. Yeah. I've just come to the conclusion, and we've bounced all around from time to time. I've come to the conclusion that Donald Trump is developmentally slow. He's not okay in the noggin. It's just that simple. And that's where we are. Yeah. Most mistreated man. Now, on the other hand, speaking of presidential history, because this is pretty good. Pete Buttigieg. Was talking recently. He was interviewed by Axios on HBO. And it was on last night. And he answered a question from Axios about how he responds when people say that he's too young, too liberal, too gay to be commander-in-chief. I don't think he's too liberal. Let's just get that out of the way. Too young, too liberal, too gay to be commander-in-chief. Pete Buttigieg responded by saying, I would imagine we've probably had excellent presidents who were gay. We just didn't know which ones. And, of course, he's correct in that. Later on, he gave himself a bit of a little bit of room to maneuver by saying, my gaydar doesn't even work that well in the present, let alone retroactively, but one can only assume that's the case. And I presume he's talking about it on a statistical basis. But one doesn't have to really rely on statistics. It is a near certainty that we have had a gay president in the United States. James Buchanan comes rushing to mind. He was, in fact, our only confirmed bachelor president. But it's not just that. It's that when he was in the Congress before he became president, he was as tight with Senator Rufus King of Alabama, well, as Donald Trump is with Vladimir Putin, or, oh, I don't know, Lindsey Graham. My, oh, my. You know, Lindsey's a little tiny fellow. Lindsey's practically a hobbit. And I know this because I've stood next to him, past him in the hallways underneath the in the basement of the Russell Senate office building. Little guy. Not much to him at all. And I saw a photograph of him in today's Washington Post, carrying golf clubs whilst wearing about knee-length short pants. My immediate thought was not that he himself was playing golf, but rather that he had finally given up and just become Donald Trump's caddy. That's caddy with D's, not T's. Yeah. So, now, Pete Buttigieg is correct. But we don't have to limit ourselves, and they slept together. Rufus King and James Buchanan slept together, and in fact, the other members of the Congress routinely commented on how inseparable the two were. And neither of them seemed particularly that much interested in, you know, girls or women. Of course, to see, well, no, that let's just stay away from that, Bob. And in fact, Rufus, and of course, this is during the pre-Civil War Washington, D.C. era. There were not a lot of public accommodations in this town. What there were completely filled. But it was an era when men slept together. Just because bed space. But even as accommodations expanded in D.C., well, Rufus and James Buchanan continued to snuggle. And while it was, I suppose, catty with a T, a two T's, Rufus was referred to as relative to his relationship with James Buchanan, who in 1856 would become the President of the United States. Rufus King was referred to as simply Nancy. It was a more genteel time, so one simply did not ask questions. One merely came up with euphemisms. James Buchanan, of course, was from Pennsylvania, but he had deep affinity, shall we say, for his fellow Americans who happened to be Southerners, who happened to own other human beings or think they did, and happened to be willing to tear the entire country apart and get a few hundred thousand loyal Americans and a few hundred thousand traitors dead as a result. James Buchanan is probably the single most obvious cause of the Civil War, because he would not even attempt to bring the South to anything resembling a responsible position. So as far as what Pete Buttigieg said, James Buchanan is probably candidate number one. But you know what? George Washington. Oh, sure, he was married to Martha. Never had any kids. Married the older woman. Had no money of his own. And proceeded to parlay all that into quite the fortune. Never had any of his own kids. And what's more, and this is remarked on in the historical, in history, in primary source documents, when he was general of the commanding general of the Continental Army, what in the hell is this? Stand by. But when he was commanding general of the Continental Army, Washington surrounded himself with a lot of young boys of sort of fluid sexuality. Alexander Hamilton, the Marquis de Lafayette, another guy whose name I can't remember, he went on to die. And there was correspondence that was more florid and romantic than anything you would ever read. I mean, it made the balcony scene from Romeo and Juliet look downright terse. So I guess Pete Buttigieg didn't want to run the risk of sort of outing the father of our country, or the guy who almost got our country torn in two, James Buchanan. But he's right. And, you know, this being Pride Month and everything, it's worth noting that, yes, we have probably had at least one, probably more than one, gay or bi or sexuality fluid chief executive officers. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't include Donald Trump in all of that. I don't think he's gay, but I think he's had some boyfriends. I mean, Jesus, the cheesecake photo of him in the little shorty kimono robe on the hotel room bed back when he was young-ish. Yeah. You know, there were the rumors about George W. And somebody from, I think, Tennessee. I don't recall the details. It really shouldn't matter. But then again, this is More End Monday, so part of this is to nominate the fine folks at Axios for asking a question like, what do you say to the people who say you're too young, too liberal, and too gay? Well, I'll tell you what, that's some top-notch journalism, ain't it? Oh, and by the way, going back to chinless Mitch McConnell, Darlene in Connecticut observes, not only that, but Mitch is the grim crippled reaper, and I, Darlene from Connecticut, can write that tongue-in-cheek because I'm a crip myself and proud of it. All the more incredulous and incredibly perplexing that Mitch has no empathy for others with physical and health maladies when you take into account his difficulties in childhood due to his disability. Have you seen him try to navigate a flight of stairs lately? Didn't he benefit from FDR's Warm Springs Spa? Why, yes, yes, he did. How on earth can he not empathize with the first responders of 9/11? The fact that he's had first-hand experience with a crippling and disabling disease and still not get it shows, in my opinion, how truly evil a Republican he is. Because we all know that Republicans have no capacity for empathy unless they've experienced that same adversity firsthand or that of a loved one. Yet he has failed to make the correlation to his own life experience. That's fucking scary. Wow, Bob, Darlene adds, you invoked FDR the very second I was writing about him. I love the synchronicities. I do too. That's what makes all of this so much fun. But yeah, Mitch McConnell does have his own experiences with disabilities and severely limiting maladies. But you know what? Even if you dealt with it, when you get to that point where, or if you have that kind of character defect, character flaw, in which the only thing you care about is money and power, whatever you yourself have experienced does not matter. And Mitch McConnell is one such person. Mitch McConnell cares probably about two people on this planet. Mitch McConnell and immediately behind that, his wife, who made him so inexpressibly, undescribably, fabulously wealthy, Elaine Chao. Everyone else, on the other hand, can hang fire. It's just how it works. But we've, there's, there's a bunch of potential moranity out there. I don't think there's a bigger moran in America, just on general principles, than Tom Cotton. Tom Cottonhead from Arkansas. Tom's trying to put a little, he's trying to get a little traction with something that he's been blathering for a while now. He's trying to take that old bully line about,
I'll beat you with two punches, the first one and the last one.
So he went on Face the Nation and, interviewed by Margaret Brennan, began shrieking for war with Iran. Because as a Southern senator, he knows that there is always a certain contingent of his constituency that gets all worked up by waving the bloody shirt. In the days leading up to the Civil War, there were recruiting posters that warned that if young Southern men didn't, young Southern white men didn't sign up for the rebel army, that the Yankees was going to come down and rape all the women's. And they believed it. Now, he said on Face the Nation that there wouldn't be much to a war with Iran, and it would be over with just two strikes. The first strike and the last strike. Now remember, Tom Cotton is one of those people who served in Iraq. You know, our dirty, filthy, bloody, costly, ill-advised, ignorant war with the that we engaged in against the innocent people of Iraq that cost somewhere around 1 million innocent Iraqi civilians their lives. He fought in that. He was on the losing side. You know, us, we the people, Mirka. But my God, there is a contingent of Republicans out there that want a war with Iran so badly they can taste it. And it's got that ferrous tang of blood in the mouth, like when you unintentionally bite your tongue or the inside of your cheek. And you, that's what blood tastes like. Ugh. As far as Mitch caring about anything, Ron in Raleigh points out, wait a minute, as far as caring's concerned, how about his aide that retired a few years back that old Mitch blubbered about on TV? I'm guessing he cared about him, if you catch my drift. And I do, and I think on a larger basis, you know, we do. Oh, yeah. So, Tom Cotton wants a shooting war with Iraq, which is not going to be the pushover, or with Iran, which is not going to be the pushover that Iraq was. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it's the darndest thing. Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point, is having the devil's own time trying to get anybody to buy the baloney that he is selling as a reason to go to war with Iran. Even the owner of the ship, the Kokuka Courageous, says, no, it wasn't a mine. Something flew, a flying projectile struck the oil tanker. And the pathetic, grainy video that they've released couldn't possibly be any dodgier. And yet there are people out there who are simple enough to say, that's got to be some Iranians. Never for a moment imagining that little vessels like that are available all over the Persian Gulf, and that, well, you can dress up anybody any way you want to, and, yeah, well, Iran's crazy. They're bad people. Bruga, bruga, bruga. Meanwhile, all the time. No. That's okay. Tell MBS that I'm not available for commentary. I'm on the phone. I'm doing my hair. I mean, a country led by a guy who orders the covert chopping up of a political enemy. Well, that would I mean, Saudi Arabia would never, ever, ever, ever do something like that. Now, would they? Of course they would. I mean, the UAE doesn't have any. No, actually, they do. But, you know, that doesn't stop old Mike Pompeo from trying now, does it? But the owner of the Courageous says, nah, somebody, we saw something flying toward the ship. That was Yutaka Katata, who's president of Kokaku Sangyo Company, who actually held a press conference for all of this. He said, I do not think there was a time bomb or an object attached to the side of the ship. Nonetheless, well, the Trump regime keeps putting out sketchy, dodgy bullshit to try to make the case for slaughtering some Iranians, because the mere thought of it just turns Mike Pompeo. He graduated first in his class at West Point, you know. Yeah, right. Like I said, morons. Lots and lots of morons. Oh, I need just a minute. Huh. I had to get back into the chat room. But like I said, I guess we're down somewhere around 675, or that's what we'll call it, that's what we'll say. It's more than that, but it's just where we are. And thanks to Anatole. And we've got 375 to go on the Have a Week on Me challenge. And with any luck at all, we'll take a bite out of it this evening. It would be nice. And by the way, just because bandwidth is behaving the way the bandwidth is this evening, if you want to get involved, if you want to carry on some conversation, we'll be using the stress line exclusively tonight. That, of course, is 844-843-4676. 844-843-4676. Scott in San Diego. Supposed Iranian attack on tankers. Oman is apparently the Arabic word for Tonkin. Imagine that. Who knew? Oh, yeah. But the thing is, we're supposed to be so simple that we just fall for anything that happens. And we're not that simple. And the one thing that provides a little bit of hope in all of this is that you've got a little bit of a rebellion against the idea of selling Saudi Arabia any more arms, and that's bipartisan. And you've got a majority in the House who are Democrats who are not likely to simply rubber stamp any attempt at starting World War III that the nitwit Nero may care to perpetrate. So that's the, we've made it to the top of the hour. I'm going to take a brief break. I'll be back in a few minutes. And then we'll see what hour two brings to us. Okay? This is The Horn. I'm Bob, on the road, and I'll be back. And so we're back, and hour two beginneth. Thanks for tolerating the brief delay there. I appreciate it. I thought we would get started with hour two with a couple of Supreme Court stories. And I'll mention along the way that it's amazing how much difference there is between being in one's home studio and, you know, a hotel room. So I apologize for any harum-scarumness to this. In terms of a program note, we were lucky. We got out of our last meeting at about 3:30 today, and the commute back across the river was as easy as any I've ever had in D.C. Doesn't mean there wasn't any traffic. It was just easy and, you know, no big snarls. So I'm hoping we will have more than not during the coming week. Tomorrow looks reasonably decent as well. But just sort of a heads up in that regard. By the way, the news broke during the last hour that Julius Geezer has sent another 1,000 troops to the Middle East and is vowing that, for what, you know, what it's worth, which is precisely nothing,
Iran will never be allowed to develop a nuclear weapon.
These fuckers really do want to get their war on, don't they? Yes, they do. Of course, don't worry. Don Jr., Uday and Kuse, Beavis and Butthead, they won't put their precious hides at risk because Trumps don't serve their country. No matter what their country is, they don't serve it. Plain and simple. And, frankly, 1,000 troops are not enough to deter Iran because that's a whole lot bigger affair than a few thousand troops. Ron in the non-frozen north says, I'm wondering whether T. Rump will invite the Toronto Raptors to visit the White House. Yeah, I'm guessing no. And with any luck at all, they would have the common decency to refuse to show up too, one hopes. Yeah, Steve in New York noting, we're sending another 1,000 troops to a place where we don't want to fight a war, right? I mean, I'm just making sure I'm understanding what's going on. Hey, that's about the size of it.
No, we don't want to fight a war there, but we're not going to let them have a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, see, it scorched Geezer Disgustus's hide when the supreme, exalted, noble Ayatollah declared that he had no messages to send to Trump because Trump was unworthy of conversation. You know how frustrating it is when you hear a message from the supreme, noble, exalted, gracious, most puissant Ayatollah of Iran, and you find yourself agreeing with that guy because you yourself don't think that, you wouldn't pee on Donald Trump if he were on fire, as we say in the hills. Because that's kind of where, yeah. Jesus. And all you can do is get up every morning and wonder if this will be the day that he tries to start World War III. Mm-hmm. Moran Monday nomination coming from Tracy. Kyle Kashuv, K-A-S-H-U-V. Kyle Kashuv is apparently an intelligent young man, and he's one of the survivors of the slaughter at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. And because he wasn't like his classmates, who immediately understood one of the root causes, which was the ease of access that people have to firearms, well, he became somewhat of a darling of the gun fetish white wing in America. And he's been traveling the country as an high school outreach director for Turning Point USA. Now, wasn't this the same group that had Candace Owens in it? The woman who said that Hitler would have been okay if he would have just stuck to nationalism and stayed within his own borders and just, you know, tortured Jews and gays and people with disabilities in Germany? Yeah, I think so. I think so. Well, he was taking a year off of studies, and he was going around being a white-wing conservative. And, by Jove, Harvard decided to give him a slot in their freshman class in the fall of 2020. And now it's all fallen through because it turns out that Kyle Kashuv had a penchant for making racist remarks back when he was 16. He wrote vile things about women, used racist language, used anti-Semitic language, had a real taste for using that word that isn't ginger but has all the same letters. And so on June 3rd, Harvard wrote to Kyle Kashuv and said, "After careful consideration, the committee voted to rescind your admission." By way of excuse, the following, when he was trying to save his admission: "We were 16-year-olds making idiotic comments using callous and inflammatory language in an effort to be as extreme and shocking as possible." So, I guess he won't be a Harvard man. Oh, don't worry. I'm sure there's lots of fine, upstanding white wing universities. Maybe he could go to Falwell U. Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, he's trying to muster up an apology. "While I will forever bear incredible shame for typing them. As if someone dictated and he just typed. "I especially feel remorse now that they've been made public, knowing that they've caused terrible pain to people I care about." How about that? He admitted it. He feels shame because they became public, not because, typing. Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay. He will immediately be made a martyr to the white wing cause. There's an interesting thought. Renee, not too far away in D.C., Says, just wondering what the Supreme Court majority morons would opine if Mayor Pete got the top job and the antediluvian South refused recognizing his position, let alone marital status. Well, the Supreme Court's spoken, Renee. I mean, even John Roberts, none other than John Roberts, was part of the Obergefell majority. I think he even wrote the Obergefell decision, didn't he? I mean, his clerk did. But the past few days are any indication, it would provide it would not go over well. And granted, we're not talking about the South here, but in Detroit, the Detroit Pride Parade, neo-Nazis and right-wing extremists and racists and bigots, they tried to infiltrate the Detroit Pride Parade. And then, Saturday, in itsy-bitsy little inconsequential Beckley, West Virginia, the gay community there decided to have a pride picnic at the Beckley Intermodal Gateway. I know it sounds really fancy, but it means parking lot. It's the parking lot next to the bus station. And so they got together to have a little pride picnic, and lo and behold, along come the Christians carrying their signs. Let's see. One said LGBTQ. Let God burn them quickly. Yeah. And then, let's see, where was this other one? Oh, right here in the D.C. area. Three teenagers under arrest because they and several others participated in an attack on a gay couple early yesterday morning, Sunday. Elena Gertz is a spokeswoman for Metro D.C. Police Department and said the case is still under investigation and sexual orientation is being investigated as a motivation. Because 19-year-old Marcus Britt and a 15-year-old and a 16-year-old all joined in, all from Fort Washington, Maryland, and were charged with robbery by force and violence after allegedly assaulting at least one of the victims and fleeing with his property. But it's a lot worse than that. Carl Craven, on a GoFundMe page, wrote about the attack on him and his boyfriend. He didn't name the boyfriend. They ran into these kids while they stopped to just converse with one another in between walking from a place called Hawthorne Nellie's, which is a popular gay sports bar. Carl Craven said of his boyfriend, he was leaning against me, and a few guys started yelling faggot at him and started to swing at him. It was all a quick blur, but next thing you know, there were literally a mob of 15 guys beating him. They came out of nowhere, and I was powerless to stop them. All I could do was jump on him to try to protect him and scream help. He can't say, Carl Craven, how long the attack went on, but the group took his wallet, they took his boyfriend's phone, and bashed in some of his teeth, busted his lip, needed stitches, black eye, bloody gauze over his swollen lips. And to top it all off, because this is Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe under God, Carl Craven said of his boyfriend, he doesn't have insurance and can't afford the ER and tooth repair bill. They've raised $7,000 of a $10,000 goal. Craven went on to say, D.C. Police LGBT Liaison Unit just visited us to see how we're doing. And D.C. Police continue to work the case. when I see a story like this, I'm often reminded of how the conservatives, we don't need no hate crime laws. That's a thought crime. Well, no, it's a crime. The article from NBC also notes that a transgender woman by the name of Zoe Spears was shot and killed Thursday night in Fairmont Heights, a Maryland suburb of D.C. And it was only four blocks from where another transgender woman, Ashante Carmon, was murdered back in March. It's dangerous out there in Trump America. Make no mistake about it. And it's made more so by virtue of the fact that they feel like that they have been set free to do these things. The tone is set from the top down. And I don't know, maybe Donald Trump will say that there are some very fine gay bashers out there. Anybody be surprised? As to the Harvard reject, Lee in New York says, too bad he can't go to Trump University. Oh, that'd be a delight. And yeah, that's right. Speaking of the entire Trump family, Lee notes Queen Elizabeth II has more military service than the entire family. Okay, Steve says, I think Kennedy wrote the Obergefell decision. But I know Roberts was part of the majority. Steve continues and notes, oh, look, a bunch of Christians in West Virginia spouting the love that passeth no, I mean all, understanding. See, that's the thing I don't get. Is it, what don't they understand about love thy neighbor as thyself? Because, I mean, it's right there. But then again, they don't read the book so much as thump it. But when these things happen, you know who else I fault? I mean, sure, the Christians who do the attacks. But where are the good Christians? You know, every time a Muslim does something wrong, all over this country, right-wing radio is awash in these filthy bigots, these Islamophobes and what have you, you know, Republicans, screaming, why, my friends, why won't the good Muslims do something about sauce, goose, sauce, gander? Where are the good Christians? Why won't the, where are the, I mean, come on, it can't be that difficult. I mean, I can't do it. I'm not one. But it can't be that difficult for the good Christians to say, no, those people aren't really Christians. They're not going to heaven. They're not partaking of the grace of Christ Jesus. They're not saved. And they're going to barbecue in hell for all eternity. I mean, you might at least manage to make them think. I mean, thinking they're not so good at. But maybe, just maybe. If the good Christians would get a little bit louder, a little bit noisier, a little bit more in their face, a little bit more, Jesus among the money changers, and a little bit less Jesus in the manger with these homicidal, bloodthirsty fundamentalist maniacs. I know it's not Wednesday, but I think it's a fair question. And Steve in New York noting, oh, dear Bob, they don't live next to no gays. They ain't got no, hell, I live up a holler. I ain't got no neighbors. Yeah, so we're halfway through the program. And golly, we sure do need to catch up on fundraising some. I'm sorry about Friday night. I'd planned on being on the air, but getting Ferg home from work turned out to be a little bit more of an ordeal than I had anticipated. But regardless, if we could take that $675 or $650 or whatever it is down some, it would be awesome. And maybe even you know, meet the rest of the Have a Week on Me challenge, which now stands at 375. Love thy neighbor as thyself, says Lee in New York. These people would hate themselves for being LGBTQ. So, of course, they hate the ones who can admit it. Yeah. All right, so at the halfway point, let's go see if the Bluetooth and the stress line all work. I'll bet it does. Are you there, Scott? Is that you?
I are here, Bob. Are you there?
If you're hearing me, I am.
Well, I'm hearing you, and you're apparently hearing me. And I'm calling to tell you, I'm going to make it brief today, because I'm kind of in a funk. I'm kind of pissed off.
Yeah?
I'm kind of disappointed.
Yeah?
Yesterday, I had a milestone birth date, and I blew out all 65 candles on the cake. Now, mind you, I went to the cupboard after I got the cake. I went to the cupboard and found a box that had candles in it. Correction, a candle in it.
Okay.
So I put the candle at the center of the cake, lit it, blew it out, lit it, blew it out, lit it, blew it out. I did that 65 times, and I lost count once. And that.
My God,
over.
Did you hyperventilate?
Well, I had to crawl back to the living room to sit down to have a piece of cake.
It, right, you breathe into a brown paper bag. Let's see if the, let's see if the sound effects work. Hold on.
Right.
Yeah, you get an ovation for your 65th birthday. Happy 65th birthday, Scott.
Thank you, Bob. I don't believe it. And on top of that, even though I blew out a candle more than 65 times, and I'm sure that counts technically, I woke up this morning and my wish had not come true.
Oh, I bet I know what it was.
What do you think it was?
I don't know. Is it the same thing that would occasion a news story? Middle-aged progressive West Virginia broadcaster caught running naked in yard?
Oh, no. Nothing is colorful as that. I was kind of thinking that it might do the world a little good if all of a certain occupant of a large house in Washington's innards would slip rapidly out of his butthole, they'd cart him off to Walter Reed or wherever.
Yeah, let's see. That would be your dinner in your central time zone, verging on your mountain time zone, but. Yes,
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I completely understand.
Maybe I've got to reconfigure the wish and go for something a little less jarring or something. I don't know. But I said I would make it brief. I do want to hear your thoughts about what old Slappy Clarence Thomas said about he wishes the court would readdress. I forget, that wasn't the exact word, but he wanted them to readdress a bunch of erroneous decisions. I saw that today, and I figured you'd have something to say about it. But before you do, I just have two quick TV viewing tips that I think the Horn family would get a lot of benefit from. One is a documentary that premiered on HBO last week called Ice on Fire. Leonardo DiCaprio apparently narrated it and may have been a producer or something. It's probably the best film that I have seen on climate change that has ever come my way. So anyone who has access to HBO or HBO Go or HBO Now, check it out. It's called Ice on Fire. And basically, it gives a very straightforward summation of where we are planetarily in terms of climate change and the ticking clock, okay? But it also highlights a number of ways, some of which I'd never heard of, that we can either mitigate the effect of what's been going on with carbon in our environment, not only mitigate some of that effect, but actually reverse the effect. And it really was an eye-opening in terms of the problem, yet very optimistic and clear-eyed look at what's possible if we would only shift our mindset instead of seeing the profit potential in the problem, that is to say, fossil fuel consumption, okay, that we would shift our mindset and gear our science in such a way as to see the profit and good potential possible in the solution to fossil fuel burning and usage over the last 200, 150, 175 years or so. So there was that, Ice on Fire. And then tomorrow night on PBS, there's a documentary that I had heard about some months ago that features someone who I actually met as a high schooler growing up in the D.C. area. It was either my freshman or sophomore year as I was mulling over the possibilities in terms of life and aliveness and sexuality and human rights and stuff. I went over to see the president and founder of the Mattachine Society of Washington, D.C., Dr. Franklin Tammany. And a lot of people are not aware of his presence on the planet and just what he was responsible for in terms of the early gay rights movement. Dr. Tammany was a veteran of World War II. He got his college education and master's and doctorate from Harvard, I think, and went on to become an astronomer for the United States government until he was busted on a vice charge in 1957 and was fired from his job as an astronomer for the government. And this did not sit well with Dr. Tammany because he was of the opinion that it was wrong because he was an American. And if the Constitution and Bill of Rights protects one of us, it protects all of us. And it shouldn't matter who we love, which seemed to me to be a pretty level-headed approach to it. And he went through the various hoops, the flaming hoops, to get his job back and become reinstated and all of that, all to no avail. So then he got really, really engaged and said, well, I will just do my level best from here until they cart me off, put me in a box, and bury me. I will do my level best to see that these types of wrongs don't occur to other gay people and lesbian people and bi people and transgender people. And Dr. Tammany did not live to see, I forget the exact year that he died. It was several years ago, maybe 6 years ago. I don't believe he lived to see the marriage equality come into effect. But by God, he worked on behalf of gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual people. Well, anyway, I say all that to say this. Tomorrow night, Tuesday night, 9 p.m., PBS, check local listings. There's a documentary on for 1 hour called Lavender Scare. Now, everybody's heard of the Red Scare, McCarthyism, and a commie under every bed. Well, parallel to that were efforts on the part of the federal government to have what I'm calling a lavender scare. That is to say, they saw gay people in government service as a bona fide threat to our national security. That's what they said. Well, we know that the opposite is true and not their stance. But I haven't seen it because it hasn't aired yet, but I've seen clips. Lavender Scare on PBS tomorrow night. Check local listings. It looks to be a very well done documentary. And I'm proud to say that I knew Dr. Kameny and I applauded him for his efforts in terms of human rights. So that's pretty much it. And I think I'll close with a quote that I think you'll get a lot of, because you never met the guy, but this will give you an idea of where he's coming from. You there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had a call coming in. Anyway, here's what Dr. Kameny said. If society and I differ on something, I'm willing to give the matter a second look. If we still differ, then I am right and society is wrong. And society can go its way as long as it doesn't get in my way. But if it does, there's going to be a fight. And I'm not going to be the one who backs down. That has been the underlying premise of the conduct of my life. And I think we can all take something from that attitude.
That's a pretty impressive statement.
Yeah. I wish you may already know something about the man, but I wish more people were aware of the role that he played early on, back way before it was fashionable to be gay or bi or lesbian or transgender. So check out I know you don't have HBO anymore, but
I should note, because I got notes from both Irwin and Ron and Raleigh, that for a limited time, Ice on Fire is on HBO.com for free.
Oh, good.
So if you go to HBO.com and you look for the free content, it's there.
Well, I recommend it. I'm telling you, it was informative and thought-provoking and challenging, yet it showed ways out that are workable. Some of them workable right now as I speak. So that's my little 2 cents worth. And I'm hoping, see, what happened with the birthday fairy, Bob, is sometimes the birthday fairy depends too heavily on our U.S. postal system. And sometimes the goody doesn't arrive the day after, since Sunday was a postal holiday. It didn't arrive today. And I said, well, I'll give the birthday fairy an extra day to get his or her act together. And if the birthday fairy is consistent with past goodies that he or she has brought my way for birthday, I hope to send you at least $10 of it to help.
Bless your heart, because among other things, Kitty just jumped in. Kitty in Boston, and said in honor of Scott's birthday. So we're now down to 660 to go, and 360 in the have a week on me challenge. And so that's done in your name, and in hopes that you will soon recover and recuperate from that massive dose of hyperventilation to which you subjected yourself.
Yeah, I tell you, Bob, it ain't one thing, it's another. And I don't know.
If it ain't lice, it's bed bugs. Yep, that's the way it runs.
Well, wait a minute. Let's not even talk about those things. I'm having enough trouble with the little creepy crawlies that are bothering Chirps, the cat. Out here, fleas are horrible, but they're not horrible every year. But this year, they seem to be worse than usual. So I got her some little things, little drops that I put on her between her little shoulder blades and.
Yeah, the place she can't lick.
Yeah, yeah. And it's pretty effective, and it's relatively safe, I guess, for a insecticide or better EDT, you know. But anyway, that's pretty much all I got, I guess. But to talk about Clarence Slappy Thomas.
Oh, Jesus. Are you talking about that dissent, or I guess it's a concurring opinion in gamble. Jesus, that's for people who read and pay attention to Supreme Courty stuff. That is some terrifying horse shit he was shoveling, Slappy Thomas.
Yeah, because if I get the gist of what he was saying, he wants the court officially to revisit stuff that's already been decided.
Well, no, he's just decided that he should be the final arbiter, since he's now got this weird-ass right-wing majority on the court. He wants to be the final arbiter of which precedents of the court live and which precedents of the court die. And what becomes particularly terrifying out of that is that, among other things, he's a black guy, for Christ's sakes, and he has declared or given reason for people to think that he is of the opinion that the lunch count, government action in desegregating lunch counters was unconstitutional. He has suggested that child labor laws are unconstitutional.
Well, wait a minute. You've got two decisions there. One that goes back within my lifetime, back to early 60s with the lunch counters, I'm sure, or maybe late 50s. And you got another one regarding child labor that goes back way before you or I showed up on planet Earth. What the fuck does he intend by this? I mean, aren't we in the 21st century?
No, because among other things, he has cited a 17th century self-help book that suggested that parents be mean to their kids as an argument in favor of the principle that children have no...
Well,
I mean, this guy's terrifying, and he's got people like Ann's boy Neil and Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer, and they've kind of got the bit in their teeth.
Well,
if he was given his druthers, he's made clear that precedent is to be thrown out based upon a political whim. And of course, when he published this over there in the Federalist Society, hands were going down pants faster than you can say pubes on a Coke can. I mean, there was some joyful masturbating taking place at the Federalist Society when this thing came out. Ooh, we're gonna go back to the slaughterhouse cases. You know what one precedent needs to go? Brown versus Board of Education. We need to go back to the Plessy precedent.
Oh God, come on.
And like at the Federalist Society and all these right wing think tanks, the one that really gets them off is Lochner. Lochner versus New York.
Because, which case was that?
Okay, this was an early case in which the state of New York saw how badly bakers were being abused, and limited the hours that a baker. Sadly, no. Just in general, and the state of New York limited the number of hours that a baker could work, and the state of New York was sued, and the Supreme Court got hold of it, and it's roughly the same Supreme Court that gave us Plessy, by the way.
Oh, Jesus.
And they invented this bullshit concept called privity of contract. And they said that because of privity of contract, the New York State government's statute limiting the number of hours that a baker could work was unconstitutional, because the state of New York had interfered in the sacred relationship between parties to a contract. You know, the bread company, the bakery, with all the money and all the power, and the poor bastard baker, whose only power was in his labor.
Yeah, now that you've told me what it is, it seems to ring a bell.
Well, these filthy right-wing outfits, especially the libertarian types and whatnot, they do. They get positively sticky thinking about getting going back to Lochner, because to go back to Lochner basically gets rid of every union in the United States.
You know something, though, and I know my raving optimism is coming to the fore here, but I kind of think that there is an overreach going on with these fools. And I have the strong impression that they're rushing to see just how much crap they can get done before the 2020 election. Because I tend to think that on some level, they're cognizant of the fact that the handwriting is on the wall for them and their type. That there's a course correction ahead in the not too distant future. And I think they're trying to give the bums rush to the country
But again, and this is not a Trump thing. I mean, Trump has no more idea what Lochner is than he could spell Lochner, okay?
No, these are the crazy fucking originalists or federalists or whatever. Yeah.
No. Hold on. These aren't the crazies. This is just, I mean, there are perfectly otherwise sane people who stand around cocktail parties at Harvard and Yale and the economics department at the University of Chicago, and they say, you know, we could really make America great again if we could just go back to that fucking Lochner. Get rid of the National Labor Relations Board because it's unconstitutional. It's all fuck.
Well, no, I'm saying, isn't that mindset rather crazy in today's world?
No. It's Republican, Scott.
Well,
I mean, I've got, Dave from the Blind in Taliban, Indiana, writing in, does Injustice Thomas expect to revisit Dred Scott? And does he already have a position in the big house? And by the way, he wishes you a happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You know what? As long as Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas got grandfathered in, everybody else could go and chop cotton.
Well, is there some reality in my take in terms of they're rushing as fast as they can to do as much, in our minds, damage as they can, because a course correction is somewhat likely in 2020? I mean, Trump's own poll, which that's another
thing. No, don't sleep on that. Please don't sleep on that.
Well, have you been looking at these clips from George Stephanopoulos' 30 hours?
That's what's got me convinced. I mean, I finally, you know, we've gone, is he evil? Is he crazy? No, he, and I haven't used this phrase in years, and I hope people will forgive me for saying it because I don't mean any harm by it. I use this term specifically with regard to Donald Trump. He is mentally retarded. Okay? Retard merely means slow. It's a mute, like in a musical notation. When you see retard, it means to slow the music.
Yeah.
He is and has been. He's developmentally delayed. He's developmentally slow. or what once upon a time was referred to as mentally retarded. You can hear it all over that George Stephanopoulos piece, Scott.
I know, I heard it. I watched the
oh sweet Jesus, please, the business where he tells Mick Mulvaney to get out of the room if he's going to cough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there going, see, that just shows what an asshole he is. No. Oh, my God. That was a signal. Mick Mulvaney having the sudden onset of the 15-second Ebola. Stop it! Was a signal, a prearranged signal to Trump to ixnay on the whatever way. Opstay it. Because he was already in a nasty place, and he was about to go to an even nastier one when and you know, Mick Mulvaney's a true believer. And so it gets turned into this little set piece, this little production piece, where
you know, I can't stand it when people get.
And so he broke the flow, but then because Donald Trump is developmentally slow, he went back and did it again.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, did you see the drawings of the new plane, the new Air Force One?
Oh, Christ God. By the way, you know, I meant to mention this because it is Pride Month. You know, over the last few years, we've taken pronouns to task. And so some people like to refer to themselves in the third person plural. One individual uses their and theirs. And, well, the third person singular neuter is it and its. I don't know if
you're losing me. Where?
Personal pronouns.
Okay.
He, his, she, hers, it, yeah. Its. Okay?
Yeah.
IT and ITS, not IT apostrophe S.
Right.
Well, the other day, in talking about the damn plane, Nitwit Nero started blathering on about how the plane was okay for the Kennedys and Jackie O. And then he said, but we have a new Jackie O, and its name is Melania.
No.
So I want to congratulate Melanoma Trump for coming out and using her pronouns. I'm sorry, and using its pronouns, because it has the right to be referred to using the pronouns that it prefers. And it apparently prefers it, not she, or not there. Because Donald Trump himself said, we have a new Jackie O, and its name is Melania.
Well, I fail to see the resemblance. I mean, first of all, the Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis was a classy woman.
I had a feeling this was going to make you bark at the moon and eat dirt and run rabbits.
I mean, just the fact that she's sitting a foot and a half from her husband, having his damn brains blown out.
Well, yeah, and like I said, Josh Marshall over at TPM immediately tweeted back to Beavis when he tweeted, he's right about how mistreated Trump's been. He tweeted a picture of Abraham Lincoln. You know, there's a graphic photo from the Zapruder film that could have been tweeted back.
Yeah, frame 313, as I recall.
Down and to the left.
Yeah, back and to the left.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
Well, anyone who's seen that film, and I'll never, I didn't mean to go on to the JFK thing, but I'll never forget in 1975, I guess it was, on an ABC program up against Carson in the 11:30 time frame, Geraldo Rivera, Dick Gregory, and Robert Groden, who's a photographic expert on the case, was the first time that the American public got to see the Zapruder film. And I watched it. And I'm telling you, once America saw that and put that in a side-by-side comparison with the, quote, official story, that's what led to the House Assassinations Committee hearings a couple of years later that brought us a new official story, or a second official story, that there was a high probability there was somebody shooting from the front. But you talk about a violent, horrible moment to witness. And this poor woman, Jackie Kennedy, was a foot and a half from the man she was married to, whose head literally exploded, part of it. And God damn, I mean, and a few years later, and God, I would hate to have paid her therapy bill, but she had the presence of mind to get into civic activities in New York City, trying to save not Penn Station, because it was long gone, but Grand Central. They wanted to tear that down. And then worked for a major publisher as an editor.
Yeah, well, I mean, melanoma could do that as long as it could do it without having to wear its clothes.
Well, the only rough comparison that I can make between those two women, there were pictures of Jackie Onassis in the nude that were taken with a photograph, a telephoto lens from a mile away or something, when she was sunbathing naked off some Greek island or something, back when she was married to Onassis. But that's not the same as contracting with a photographer on a modeling job, you know, for a lascivious effect. I mean, come on, there's two different things.
Yeah,
one
quite,
of these
yes.
things is not like the other, you know. But and I know I say it every time, but we have got to be about keeping the House, retaking the Senate, and electing somebody, hopefully somebody who is an upright individual. I saw a troubling thing, and I know you don't like to bash candidates, but apparently Harris, Mayor Pete, and Biden are the darlings of Wall Street, and that never bodes well. I mean, our recent history has shown us.
Well, I was going to mention earlier, Scott, that one of the things that chaps my ass is that all this talk about, you know, him firing his pollsters because they insist on telling him the truth, that in fact, he's getting trounced in several states by Biden. Well, they all lead the same way. He's getting trounced by Biden. But then later on, they also casually mention that he's getting trounced by everything, by everybody, you know, including Beavis and Butthead. I mean, he's getting trounced by practically everybody in the Democratic field. And they're trying so hard to make Biden inevitable. I'm here in D.C. I woke up I had my alarm set for 6 a.m. I woke up at 5:57, bing, and turned on the TV just in time to see the very beginning of my filthy morning habit, and there they were.
Well, I was going to ask if your accommodations had access to MSNBC.
And they were doing it. And they were promoting a Chris Matthews thing tonight from, I don't know, Dayton, Ohio. And he was saying, you know, just because they've got a pro-life position, don't think of them as troglodytes or Neanderthals. Lecturing the Democratic base for whom a woman's right to choose is absolutely non-negotiable. But somehow it's on us, not on the people who oppose a woman's constitutional rights. It's on us to be good to them.
Well, see, this is why I'm glad I don't have MSNBC anymore, or MSNBC or CNN or any of that. I have a rather broad selection of media that I turn to every day, and it's fairly comprehensive, I think, and I stay up on things, not just the mainstream press, but other sources of news and information. And, you know, the inevitability notion of anybody at this point, Biden or anybody else.
It's just silly.
It's stupid. It's beyond stupid. And really, in a sense, it plays right into Trump's hands, because he must always have a target, you know? I really wish a Republican would challenge him. I know it doesn't happen hardly.
Well,
ever.
I mean, it's happening. There's a guy running for the Republican nomination, but he's having a hard time getting any coverage, and that's William Weld from Massachusetts.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
but nobody's really taken the fight to him as a Republican. I mean, Jesus, did you ever think we'd see the day when we missed Bob Corker and Jeff Flake? Because even though they shot rubber-tipped arrows, at least they shot the arrows.
Well, and speaking of talking heads on the TV, and I'll kind of close on this. I said I was going to close earlier, but now I will close. You're a better man than I, Gunga Bob, because you managed to watch all of Tom Cotton on Face the Nation. I made it through the first minute and a half. And I said, let me fast forward past this crazy man.
Well, I have a secret.
You do?
It's called liquor.
Oh. Well, maybe that's the key. Maybe I need to grab my martini shaker and my little martini glass. And
that crazy little bastard's going to involve our poor country in something, to paraphrase one of my favorite lines from The In-Laws. But, yeah.
Well, these people, again, harking back to the HBO documentary Ice on Fire, they are so fixated on being, you know, the old way of thinking. I mean, because what is coal and oil? It's old technology. There are newer, less damaging things that can be brought to bear that bring us energy, but without all the detrimental impact. And it's like, oh, we must protect the oil tankers. You know, the oil is almost, in the minds of some, is probably more precious than the blood of Jesus with these people. I would dare say oil industry has raised way more bucks than the religion industry, try as it might. Fucking thumpers.
Yeah, but the thing is, the religion industry was tax-free. And by the way, you mentioned that documentary, Ice on Fire.
Oh, Exxon is not tax-free? Come on.
Well, okay. I mean, nominally. okay. Silly me.
Yeah.
But you've mentioned that documentary, Ice on Fire, and it triggered something in my memory, and I was like, son of a bitch. That was an early Styx album cover.
Was it?
Yeah, for the album Equinox, it shows an ice cube burning.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Yeah.
Well, the title, for those who haven't seen the documentary, and maybe this will make them want to watch, it's like a Mr. Wizard science experiment. They go up to the Arctic areas, and what's happening is the ice, pardon me, wait a minute. The ice up there is melting, exposing what used to be, or the permafrost also is getting squishy. And what's happened is there are eons worth of decayed plant and animal matter in which there is no small amount of methane, which is almost a worse, if not a worse, thing to inject into our ecosystem than carbon. It's as bad as carbon, if not worse.
Yes.
And what they do is they take a stick and punch a hole down, maybe 6 or 8 or 10 inches, and some of that gas comes up, and there's fucking balls of fire when you apply a flame.
Yes.
And, but again, the very fact that their mindset is such that, never mind, let as much of the ice caps melt as possible because it frees up the waterways for more of the year so that we can drill underwater for what? More oil and more gas. Again, a problem-based, quote, solution using old, dirty technology. And one more thing. I sent you by email a thing that I saw on my representative's Facebook feed today. She's become a co-sponsor to the Green...
I saw that.
It might be worth swinging by and talking to one of them.
I mean, I'd love to, but there's no swinging by time in this. Every minute is budgeted on this trip.
Now, wait a minute. You have figured out a time to go to Ollie's Trolley, I hope.
Still working on that too.
All right. Well,
but if this would be a great time for you to call her back, and you can say something like, "The bill's beginning to move, the train's leaving the station. You need to get on it."
Okay. Well, I'll do that this evening because she hears from me fairly often, and I'm fortunate to live in a place where I have a representative whose thinking is along the lines of mine.
Right.
And not a lot of people can say that in this country, but hopefully that will be changing even more in the way that we'll get more people with representatives who don't have their hand out to these fucking special interests for oil and nastiness. So, on that happy note, I will go away now, Bob. And I thank you for your efforts in our nation's capital, Disneyland on the Potomac.
Well, thank you, Scott. And again, happy birthday. You have yourself a lovely evening.
Thank you. I will. I certainly will. And I'm still waiting for the woman to jump scantily clad out of the cake. But I don't think that's happening either. So, geez.
You know, it, in this day and age, maybe you don't want to be happy with what you don't get.
Maybe. All right, Bob. Take care.
All right. See you, Scott. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The one and only Scott from San Diego. And it's about quarter past the hour, and I'm going to wrap up because it's just been a long day, and sometimes, the fact of the matter is I got to go get dinner. I haven't done that yet. Got home, got the rig set up, got everything tested, and I'm a mite peckish now. So thanks again to everybody. We'll call it 660. I guess that'll be 860 tomorrow. 360 remains on the have a week on me challenge, and hopefully we'll knock it all down and be finished by Friday, and Well, then we'll have Fundraising Free Radio next week, and won't that be freaking awesome? Okay? Okay. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to Kitty in Boston, and thanks to Kay earlier, and thanks as well to... just a minute. And thanks to Anatole, one and all. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thanks, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. Remember, the 8 campaign is a project of Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Catch you, I hope, Tuesday, tomorrow. Bye now.